You are listening to the Billionaire's Kid on the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast.
Welcome to episode 108 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is October the 20th, 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my birthday brother, James Furlough.
That's right. Big 3-0. Super exciting. So here's how I got it off to the right start. Tell me if you've ever had this experience, or if you're too young to have experienced it. Got home from church today and was like, you know what? I'm an old man. I need to take a nap before I continue on with the rest of my day, but it'll be quick because I have a lot of stuff to do. So I lay down. 3 hours later, woke up and didn't get anything done.
That literally sounds identical to my day. The only thing is, the reason that, you know, I was taking a nap is because I was up till 3 a.m. and hanging out and meeting new people. Being social, as it were. But I did make it to church, so I had that going for me.
So from like maybe 6 a.m. on, our days were similar.
Pretty much. All right. But actually, I am super stoked because I did do something this afternoon. Not something that I particularly needed to get done, but definitely wanted to get done. I installed the new radio in my...
Hey!
It's awesome. It's all like Bluetooth and USB. And like one of the big things that they advertised was that it has Pandora like connectivity, that it'll work with Pandora. And I'm like, why does it need like a special Pandora function, since all of the like it's just the iPod functionality works like just perfectly as the audio input. Bluetooth works the same. Why can't I just open up Pandora? But it's got like a special auxiliary, or like, you know, when you're like going through your different like sources, one of them is Pandora through your iPhone. Wow, that's really funny, since I haven't used Pandora since I got iTunes Radio, and I don't ever use it unless I have Wi-Fi. So nice. It's one of those features where I really like this thing for the rest of it. It's just got one extra feature that I'm like, why is it there?
Which is cool. Interesting, because had you like had that like a year ago, you'd be like, this is awesome.
I know. I'm like, yeah. Guess what, guys? Pandora Radio.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, there you go.
It's interesting. I think from to almost make this seem like it's part of the show, it is interesting, that forward compatibility idea, especially when you're buying products, you know, trying to look for things that aren't pre-designed for whatever, what's cool and hip, you know. I don't want things to have a stock Facebook button, because, you know, it's like, I still use Facebook a lot, but right now Instagram's kind of my big thing, you know. And it's like, it's interesting. It's just I don't know. But let's talk about more than just radios and Facebook, but let's talk about that too. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has a short disclosure he wants to throw at us.
Yes, I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
All right. It's good to know, so we don't get in trouble for stuff. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we've got all sorts of social media connections. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Matthew D. Furlough, and on the Instagram, I'll follow you if you follow me. I'm Next Wigan 4. I won't ruin the ending of the book since I finished it this week, but it's as good as ever.
Zero progress.
Yeah. You've only got like... Wait, it's not this Friday's next... You got 2 weeks, man.
I know. Well, my wife got really sick, so...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, it happens. though one could argue we had a lot of time to do nothing, so no excuses.
Yeah, but at the same time, I get that. I mean,
yeah. No, we'll make it. She's enjoying it, so it's not like we won't. It's just, you know, other stuff. I just finished Hunger Games, by the way.
Oh, all three of them?
All trace of them.
What'd you think? Yes, no.
I follow popular opinion, which is first two books are good, third book is not as good. I don't want to give too much away, but
I thought there were moments of the third book that were as good, if not better, than any moments, scenes from the first two books. But as a whole, yeah, I totally agree.
I would liken it, and maybe this will give too much away, but I don't care. I think a good analogy is the Matrix trilogy.
And you mean it was amazing all the way through and there's nothing wrong with any of it? I completely agree.
Where the most people would say that the third movie was not as good because it was lacking something critically important to the success of the movies previously.
Wait, what's that?
The Matrix?
Oh, that's right. Stuff happens in The Matrix. They got a lot of the coolest battles. Yeah, I know.
I'm not on the third one. There's one.
Actually, I'll be honest. I've gotten to the point where my opinion of The Matrix trilogy has become very sophisticated in that I believe I know what I would do differently and how I would. I actually think the biggest. Okay, this is off topic and probably should have happened during the intro, but I personally think the biggest thing that they did was they changed the characters from the first one to the third one. Morpheus isn't a consistent character, and that bothers me a lot. I think it really weakens him as a character, makes him less interesting, and it gives a lot more plot points that just aren't any good. And what they should have done differently, what they really should have done differently, is they should have had him be the one that blows the EMP, that destroys all the ships, that allows the robots in. And you're like, but why would he let the robots get the Zion? And he sits there and goes, because he's a lunatic. He is a fanatic. He was a fanatic, and he broke all the rules, and he fought everybody as he believed so thoroughly that Neo was the salvation of the group. And if he had become sort of a pariah as opposed to just the good guy that everybody likes, but was right in the end, but like a total maniac. And you see the other side of Morpheus's attitude, where it's like, have him be consistent. He was a crazy terrorist. That was like what he does. And he like believes everything so thoroughly, he'll do anything to make his point. And if they had kept that character consistent, but showed it from the unbelievable extreme of, why would you do that, Morpheus? I think it would have made an incredibly compelling,
which helps feed why everyone else thinks he's crazy.
Right.
Right. Instead of being like, wow, he's a rational guy. Why aren't you listening to him?
Yeah, exactly. It's super frustrating the whole time because you're like, well, but you could see Morpheus being the, I think there were small things that they did, or small things. I think they, I actually like the fact that they showed more of the world than just The Matrix, and I liked, but whatever. That's besides the point. What were we talking about? Ender's Game?
Well, technically the Hunter's a different game. A game.
Different game. I like the Hunger Games. I have been told that I have a radical opinion, and that I think that the second one was the best, but whatever.
I thought the second one was better, definitely. Mm-hmm. It was just, there was a lot more, it was more a lot more intense, I guess. There were a lot of times where I was like, whoa, okay.
It's the classic Star Wars trilogy problem of, the first one was amazing and great, and everyone was like, blew their mind. The second one was better, which just like shocks everybody. And then the third one, it would be okay on a standalone, but really and truly, like, I don't think anybody would particularly remember. Well, that's not true. Return of the Jedi really just suffers from Ewoks. Outside of that movie's pretty amazing.
I don't know how to do it in pages, but I was like 2 hours into it, and I was like, in my opinion, the book was an hour too long. Like, we could have stopped this a while ago, and it would have been okay. But anyways.
Yeah. So if you want to follow James throughout the week on social media.
Yeah, at James Furlow or JamesFurlow.com.
At James Furlows. Cool. Cool. Yeah, that's what we do. That's how we be.
Are we still going? Go ahead. Oh, you're right.
I was
going
to say, if you want to check out all the clicks and links from the show, share it with your friends, email it to the botnets, to email it to the entire world so that we can get more attention. We'd appreciate it. But the link that you want to send them to is furloughbros.com. There we've got all the articles that we talk about through the week. We've got videos, we've got audio, we've got cool graphics in a store. Check out the store. You can buy stuff. It's a good internet resource, and we highly recommend it. James, your video froze. That's not good. Hey, that's... Okay, I'm freaked out right now.
It signed me out.
It signed you out, and it brought you back in, and now there's just like...
Well, I had to sign back in, but there's... Whatever. Weird.
Cool. All right.
Can I kick this guy out? What happens if I do that? Are you sure you want to eject James Furlow from this video call? Yeah, get rid of him. You will eject. Do you also want to block this user? No. I like that guy. He's a good man.
Cool. All right.
Technology. I love technology. So anyways, I'm going to assume you were done.
Yeah, go for it.
Let's talk about something that happened. I don't want to spend too much time on this one, okay?
Sure.
I know, it's going to be really hard for you. I know.
Tell me, man.
So, Apple announced officially October 22nd, right? We weren't sure last week, if you remember correctly, and it's because they didn't, and so we didn't remember, because it didn't happen. And
so we stated it as over this fact, because it was like... Wait, whatever, it doesn't matter. That's when it's coming.
Yeah, yeah. But now it's official, and it's we still have a lot to cover, was the title of it. And I love this one commenter's thing, where they were like, wouldn't we still have a lot to cover imply that maybe a new feature of the iPads that are going to be announced will be some sort of new smart cover, perhaps something with an integrated keyboard or maybe an extended battery?
Oh, man.
I love reading the tea leaves on this.
Yeah. It's ridiculous because it's no. They just mean we've got a lot of ground to go. Actually, I'm
maybe not. I mean,
now that somebody pointed it out, this is kind of a stupid thing to say, but I don't think so. I mean, no. You know what? Tim Cook's Apple does not get that creative with these things. They haven't so far, and every time people are like, "What does it mean?" And then it, like, gets there, and it's like, it means nothing. They did exactly what you expected them to do, which was pretty awesome. But just chill out. It's cool. The big one that I'm hearing everybody talk about, everybody wants a new Apple TV so bad they can't stand it. Mm-hmm. Like how I made everybody else seem like crazy people, because I'm in that group anyway. It's like, new Apple TV! But it's
maybe
like,
it's just your interpretation of everything.
Yeah, I'm just...
You want
I'm,
a real bad, so you project.
Exactly, I'm the only one. I think he wants it really bad.
Uh-oh. Did I lose you? Wish I knew who was live and who wasn't. We'll assume that he is not live. Oh, this is going to be a long night.
So
you're back.
Google's just signing everybody out of their accounts right now? What is going on? It is super weird. And it's signing out of all of my accounts across everything that's open. And it's weird. They're doing something. I wonder if they're doing it on purpose.
I don't know.
Because that's a... That was a cross server event right there. That was they initiated something to kick us offline, and weird. So, but the thing is,
Apple
is that,
TV, everyone wants. You're the crazy one projecting on others. Go.
Yes. I was going to say, but the thing that I have read that people are like, well, it's very likely because they haven't had a refresh since 2012, and they think it hurt sales or Christmas sales or something. I don't know. But because everybody's like, oh, they need to do a refresh. So they think people are saying that they'll do a refresh just because now people are starting to hold off on buying it, waiting for the new hardware update. Mm. Now, I'm of the camp of I'm waiting for Mavericks, but, you know, I can understand why you'd wait for the hardware. I don't know. It's a...
What was it? There was... I'm trying to remember it now. There was a product... Oh, I remember. It was Sony outsold the Xbox this last month. And so for the first time, Xbox, you know, wasn't the number one selling console of the month. And, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, it's a sign. And I was kind of like, whatever.
No, it's a sign that people aren't going to buy the PS4. They're going to buy the PS3. And then they're going to buy the Xbone.
Yeah, well, they were trying to say it was Grand Theft Auto that put them over the top, but I was like, whatever. But yeah, that was funny. I immediately went, well, people are waiting for the Xbox One. I get it.
It's funny. I mean, I have more dollars than cents, as the saying goes. But my thought was, I wanted to get Grand Theft Auto 5, and I would have gotten it with the PS3. That way, I could justify, or I wouldn't have an Xbox, so I could get the Xbox One. I don't know why I would do that. I'm not going to play any of them after I play Grand Theft Auto 4, and chances are I'm not going to play it enough to justify it anyways, but which is why I didn't buy anything, but that was my thought. I would have gotten on the PS3. Huh. So, I don't know. Interesting. Hmm. Fascinating. But yeah, I think there's actually I don't know what you would do with an upgrade to the Apple TV, because I mean it's like, you know,
the only thing I've heard is a different input type thing, you know,
from a hardware
standpoint. Yeah, that's whatever.
Yeah, you could do that. You could do some cool changes just for the sake of cool changes. You know, add some new feature, and we've revolutionized it again. And, you know, but because if you think about it, like most of the upgrades to your iPads, iPhones, whatnot, it's better screen, better internals for running apps. It's like those are the big ones. That's it. You know, and it's like it doesn't run apps and it doesn't have a screen. So,
well, that could be the next thing, right?
Right. Unless they decide.
Maybe not the screen, but the apps.
The only thing that they could go for, they might try to do some sort of 4K compatibility, which I think requires a different HDMI cable, right? Does 4K do the – I don't think 4K works over HDMI. I don't know. I don't really know. Or maybe 3D.
Yes!
That would actually be pretty cool. Probably.
Trace-D.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Know. That would be cool. I could see something like that, but it is – whatever. Man, oh my gosh. Okay, if they did 3D, I'd have to get a 3D monitor.
You make
awesome.
That sound like it's a bad thing.
I know. Touché.
We just have to get one. I wouldn't have a chance.
You know what's going to be really frustrating? When they announce Mavericks and no new Apple TV, and I'm like, oh, I got to get the old one. So excited for the new one that I don't know anything about, and it's not announced.
Yeah, or, really.
What is?
No, all you do, buy the current gen, enjoy it, and the second they announce the new gen, get
sell
instantly
it.
Onto Gazelle and sell it.
Yeah.
That's all you do. And you just take the loss and go, don't worry about it.
All right. That's a good point.
We're talking about $100, right? You get 25 back. Think of it as a $25, 25% discount or something.
True.
Yeah. So, yeah. Also, what's this one you got about?
So this one's awesome. This is cool. I don't buy noise canceling headphones because they usually cost a lot of money and they almost always build it into headphones that look super ugly. And since I care more about fashion than function, it's important to me. But I like the technology. I think it's a cool idea because it's like the whole idea of like waveforms and additive stuff and how you can like have waves canceling stuff out. It's very neat. Well, these dudes, they decided to
So I'm super interested because I live near not one train track, but two train tracks. So keep going.
Okay. Yeah. No, this is a big one for you. This is called, it's called Sono. It currently is in only in prototype form, but they say that it has been shortlisted for this year's James Dyson Award.
Ooh, I don't know what that means, but
Dyson,
cool.
Dyson, the dude who like,
it makes vacuum cleaners?
He reinvented everything again with the fans and his vacuum cleaners and stuff. So he's like a,
sounds like Apple. Cool.
He's a smart engineer. That's a big deal.
Got it.
And basically what this thing is it's this little puck that you suction to your windows, like to the window of your house. And what it does is it is as the sound comes in, it basically if you take the pane of glass, the pane vibrates, it senses those vibrations as the waveform, and very, 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 very quickly does a process where it basically cancels that noise out by pumping an opposite sound signal into the glass. And what ends up happening is, since the glass is generating an inverse signal, they cancel each other out and they pause. And it works as a noise-canceling window. So you can just, like, connect these things to your house, and all of a sudden all the noise from outside goes away. It seems really cool. And glass windows are a well-known great source of for that sort of audio diaphragm. They're not particularly great for.
So that's cool. So you could actually make like a recording studio, and add these things, and that could help.
Yeah. Right. If you were to not just do these as like a piece of glass, the whole idea of being like, where you actually set up microphones that would catch sound as it was coming through. Theoretically, you could build one that like was really, really hardcore. But what's really neat about this is that they, it's got a couple of different sound settings. So once you create the inverse wave function that will cancel out the incoming, if you add in another wave function, all that's left at the end is the wave function of the added sound. So you can turn them into like a soft stereo system type thing. And so what they do is they have like all these, you can just turn it silent where it'll silence everything out there. You can also turn it so it's like the example they have is like a city thing, so it's got like honking cars and like people on the, like, why would you do that? It's a stupid setting. But it's got like meadow settings and like, like wind settings. So that, and basically what it does is it creates ambient noise that hear the equivalent of what you would hear through a window, which is cool because that's going to be what windows are best. Those are the types of sounds that windows are going to be best at transmitting as a diaphragms, whatever was passing through them anyways. And so, you can be like all of a sudden you can be in a meadow or you can be, wherever. But no, it's cool. It's a cool idea because it's one of those ones where you're like, oh, why didn't I think of that? That's clever and really, really straightforward and easy and not particularly, crazy to engineer and looks like it works pretty well. So I don't know. I would definitely think about getting one. When it comes out, depends on how much it costs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's very cool. Cool, cool, cool. I like it.
Yeah. Sounds like it. So I saw something that I liked this last week because I am a data scientist.
Yes.
That's what I am. I'll take it. There's a startup. I should know their name. Let's see here. Well, I don't know. So there's this guy. His name is Solof.
Solof.
S-O-L-O-F-F. It could be Soloff, I guess. Soloff. He looks a little like maybe he's got some Russian in him. Anyways, he is the CEO of Premise Data Corp, which they liked it because So this idea of premise is like an assumption you have going into it. So play on words.
Data jokes,
yeah,
I get in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, geeks can be funny. They're based out of San Francisco. And what's interesting about this is that in 2009, they were talking about how he saw that the government had announced that consumer prices had fallen slightly from the prior year, so negative inflation. But he was looking around the shelves at Trader Joe's, Safeway, and Whole Foods. Apparently he does well. that's where you shop if you're doing well. Anyways, he was looking around and saw that prices were actually up like 5%. So he was like, what the heck, man? And so...
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, so he was like, we can do better.
I like how he quantified how much it was up. These are up. I want to know how much.
Yeah. So he set out to create a better government statistics, I guess, is how to think about it. So like one of the things I thought was really interesting was, you know, just one of them, let's talk about global prices, inflation. How do we figure out what that is? And there's two ways that they do it. The first one is they scrape a ton of data off of a bunch of shopping sites. Yes, I love the internet. And so they're constantly getting data from that. Then they have employed people. They've got about 700 part-time workers spanning 25 cities that are equipped with Android phones that has software on it that allows them to snap and upload pictures of specific products in stores and markets. Those images are time-stamped and location-stamped, and they obviously have the price, and they can see what it is so that they can categorize it correctly. So they do this. And they said what was interesting is when the government does this kind of stuff, it takes like a month or more to aggregate all of this. He goes, it takes us a day. Which is cool.
We're gonna stick with just the story at hand.
So he said like one really interesting thing. Let me see if I can find it here. He said that I should do a better job of finding it. There was a situation in India where there was a product that they eat a lot of. All right, here, give me a second here. Okay. So in early June, their model saw a spike in the price of onions across India. Yeah, which is a critical food staple to their nation. Because apparently they had both storms and droughts, which I'm like, how does that work? Squeeze supply.
That's a good question.
So they saw this in June, but it wasn't until mid-July that the country's official data showed the first pickup in prices. And and then it was the government finally took steps to tighten their monetary policy to try to steady the currency as a result of this. But by that, the cost of onions had already tripled. And so for him, he was like, man, they could have known about it way ahead of time, got way ahead of what was going on and helped them stabilize their currency and helped them figure out, you know, what was going on. So his ultimate goal is to be able to essentially sell the data back to different governments and organizations. A lot of financial folks, you know, care a lot about that real-time data. But it's a cool way of collecting the data and a really awesome way of using your smartphone data to do it. And so they were saying, like, their inflation index, it compiles information on 240,000 products prices from 10,000 online and real-world sources.
That's a lot of data points.
In contrast, the federal government collects data on about 5,000 products.
Wow.
So not only are they getting more robust and broader look, it's faster, which you're kind of like, wow, that's awesome. And I'm willing to bet it's cheaper.
I was going to say, that's the kicker.
You know, that's
well, it almost certainly is because he can do it, you know, yeah.
So this dude, he's got a dream, and I just like, oh, that's cool.
That's very cool.
If I lived in San Francisco, I would probably apply to work for these guys.
Yeah.
Because that just sounds pretty cool. And they got an awesome name, which is kind of fun.
I'm glad you appreciate that.
Yeah. I get it. But yeah, I just thought that was a cool, like, oh man, another one of those, man, I wish I had thought of that type of things.
Yeah.
That happened. So there you go.
One of those days, man.
Premise Data Corp.
Love it. I like it. It's very cool. Very, very cool.
I thought so.
Yeah. So what do you want to talk about next?
So I know that Moore's Law is critically important.
Ah, yes. Okay, so what is Moore's Law? It's a simple premise. Came up with a dude named Moore. By a dude named Moore. Moore. He basically...
Didn't he work for Intel?
Yeah, I think so. He basically observed that... the number of transistors on a silicon in per square unit of area was doubling every 18 months, which for those of you that know about
math,
it's an exponential growth, but whenever it's you double things and it's a it's a type of expansion. It's a it's been too long. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Okay. But it ends up being a logarithmic curve, which is pretty cool because things accelerate really fast. Blah blah blah. But yeah. What ends up happening is in order to have the same computational power. And every 18 months it gets smaller, faster. Keeps the price of it going, halving just about every 18 months for the same computational power. It's been this huge, awesome thing that's been going on. And everybody keeps worrying about what happens when you run out of computational whatever. Or, like, you know, when you get to the end of Moore's Law, which is... The idea was that you know they keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller, keep doubling every 18 months. Well, at some point the transistors get so small that they're the size of individual atoms, and then you can't go much beyond that. And Intel has created in labs what they think is the theoretical minimum size of a transistor.
Which
is we're a long way off from actually getting there.
Oh, okay.
On the blog, I cringely wrote a really cool, interesting blog this week. This is what's going on in the tech news. It was kind of a bigger idea thing in talking about Moore's Law and when companies kind of and what the culture of Moore's Law has done to us. And one of the things that he noted about this, and I think is interesting, is that Moore's Law is not an economic law. It's a soft law. It's not a physics law. It's not a this is going to happen this way. A lot of it has happened where the reason why Moore's Law has stayed so consistent is because he said this is what you should expect. And so all the upper management has said, well, we should expect this sort of growth. So anything
that's what we're planning for.
That's what they planned for. That's what the engineers aimed for.
Yeah.
They never aimed really beyond that. They never really missed the mark consistently. They just kind of kept that steady progress going forward. And it's cool because it made it very easy to plan, you know, years and years and years out, because you basically knew what was going to happen. And he said, and this is really interesting. It's basically he said, if you look at the computer industry for the last four decades, there are two distinct eras when individual companies or groups, organizations, actually decided that they wanted to break Moore's Law. One time they did it intentionally, one time they did it accidentally. And the consequences were relatively similar in both cases. And so the first example he gives was the computer science lab at Xerox PARC, which for those of you who don't remember, the Xerox PARC guys were the guys that developed the first GUI that Steve Jobs stole and turned into the Apple II. No, the Macintosh. That's different.
There we go.
He didn't steal it. He licensed it illegally. But these guys are smart. They're smart dudes. Some of the biggest inventions in the computer industry have come out of the computer science lab at Xerox. Mm-hmm. And essentially what happened was this dude named Bob Taylor came up with an idea in the 70s where he said what he said was, we want to invent the future by living in it. And this is his quote. We build computers and a network and printers the way we thought they'd be in 10 years. It was far enough out to be almost impossible, yet just close enough to be barely affordable for a huge corporation. And by living in the future, we figured out what worked and what didn't. And essentially, if you look at like the actual like Moore's law, every 18 months, you get the logarithmic growth. If you aim out 10 years, as opposed to just 18 months, where you'll get the doubling, the compounding of that will actually be about 100 times. And so what they wanted to do is they wanted to say, let's start today trying to design things that, instead of being twice as small, let's try to build stuff that's 100 times smaller, which is crazy. And, you know, dump a ton of money into building networks and computers and printers and everything that were built on the idea of having silicon available or transistors available that would be of that size and that processing. So you can start to really figure out what can you do with that? You know, what does that technology afford us to do that we can't do today that we can't even imagine because we haven't seen it. And effectively what happened was this, when they started to do that, they came up with all sorts of crazy ideas and solutions that nobody could ever even like imagine at the time. Amongst those, the idea of a GUI. So this is a big idea, but this direction that they went was this direction of being able to come up with solutions long before the rest of the market had really, you know, caught up. So that by the time normal market forces, normal engineering had caught up with that, a lot of the solutions were already encapsulated. There was a tremendous amount of computer science, and the foundation for what we could do at that point had already been laid, which is cool. And a big deal and a good idea. And like, okay, that's cool. That's interesting. And then basically what happened was that period kind of ended, and we hadn't really done that. And then something kind of interesting happened. The internet started to take off in the 1990s, and as everybody started building their website and trying to, you know, do their cool thing, investors said, wait a second, there's money in this. This is the new gold rush, and people started dumping money into these companies, and obviously the dot-com bubble happened, and, you know, people were made gazillionaires overnight, and tons of money was flying everywhere. But what's interesting about this is that money wasn't just sitting in people's bank accounts. It was being spent on stuff. And specifically what it was being spent on was building up data centers and networking capabilities to be able to handle all the traffic and capabilities that people wanted to have. And there was so much money floating around these different companies at the time and there was so much expectation, even from a governmental expectation, that they basically started building infrastructure that was at a breakneck speed and was outpacing Moore's law. We were doing more faster than Moore's law would predict. And essentially what he said was, we got a little ahead of ourselves. And we built over the course of 10 years, as you come into the early 2000s, we built up this computer network that could literally handle the technology of a decade before or a decade later. And then all of a sudden the bubble popped and the network just went dead, by and large. And what he said was, and this is kind of cool, and this is where it's exciting, because he goes, essentially what happened was it took 10 years for just the normal march of progress to really catch up to what the network was capable of handling. And so today we're finally starting to see really people take advantage of what was laid down during that period. And all of these cool technologies, the internet technologies that we're using, the fact that you and I are video chatting in two different states over a server and it's going to be uploaded to YouTube and we're going to download the audio and post it to iTunes, blah, 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 blah. All of that is not necessarily just because you know, the normal march of progress. It was actually this boom that happened in the Silicon Valley a decade ago. It's really interesting, and it kind of goes this bigger picture of what's going on. It's like Google announced today or this week that they are expressly allowing home servers to be hooked up to Google Cable, Google
Fiber.
Thank you, Google Fiber. So it's like you get this super fast internet, and if you think about it, like, you know, Google's big thing with Google Fiber is if everybody had, you know, this gigabyte internet access, what would happen? What would change? What would people be capable of doing with that much stuff? They're essentially saying, let's get ahead of Moore's Law. And the reality of it is all they're doing is leveraging the network that was laid down and never utilized during the 2000s, during the run-up of the dot-com. And so we're finally getting to the point where we're actually able to utilize that network that was built during that period. No, it's really cool. It gets me excited about the next decade of internet development, because it makes me want gigabyte internet so bad I can't stand it. But it's
just say no.
I don't know, Kansas City. Mm-hmm. What kind of job can you do in Kansas City? Jobs that require a really fast internet connection. That's the kind of job.
Exactly. But,
I don't know. Well, it's cool. It's very cool. It's good time to be alive, as they say.
Just wait 10 years.
I know. Yeah. Wait a month, man. Retina display iPad minis. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you think, again, 10 years from now, 100X.
Yeah, and the idea of 100 gigabyte internet, like 100 gigabytes per second, 100 gigabits per second, that's, you could, there'd be no buffer times whatsoever. It just would happen. It's kind of cool. I was reading about the 4K TVs, and they're like, you know, what's cool is if you can wait like 3 years, 3-4 years, 4K TVs will be affordable, like really affordable, like not even, and I'm like, I don't even need it, but I want it, and okay, 4 years, I think I can wait 4 years. Thankfully, every time I see one, I'm like, wow, that's super cool. They're so stupid expensive that it's just like, and besides, video cards are really only geared for 1080p, so it's the whole infrastructure is not there yet, but it's cool, man. It's cool.
It is exciting indeed. Okay, let's talk about a recent, let's move back to Apple.
Okay.
Let's go offline with them for a little bit. So, what do you think of their new hire for the retail stores?
What's her name?
Oh, I don't remember. Angela Arenditz.
Arenditz. Cool. I think it's a good idea. I think it's cool. I'm gonna say good call. Basically, this chick is I was dismissive. This lady was the Burberry CEO. Which for those of you who are not familiar with the Burberry brand, they are one of the highest class, high fashion retailers in all of England. They're kind of a big deal. You go into their shopping center and it's ridiculous. And it's very over the top. And she is leaving that company, a CEO, and moving over to the Apple to take over their what's it called? Apple stores. To make it all awesome-ish. I don't know. I think it's cool. I think it's a good idea. I mean, because, you know, Apple has, you know, Tim Cook is relentlessly sticking to the we're a luxury brand, we're the BMW, Mercedes. You know, he always used the car analogies for the luxury brand stuff with Apple, but you know, the reality of it is there's all sorts of luxury brands out there, and Apple's as much a luxury fashion statement as it is a workhorse tool, or a car, whatever. And so the idea of, you know, getting somebody who knows how to market high luxury fashion and bring that to the world of Apple is cool. I think it'll be really interesting to see how the Apple stores evolve over time. And what's really exciting for me is that it'll probably happen in my area first, which I like.
Is she moving to the Bay Area? Do you know?
I don't know. What's his name? Johnny Ives spends like a lot of time in England.
I think he works part time there, like half his time.
Right, so I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised at all if they didn't do something similar wherever Sir Ives works, they're gonna let her. He might work out of his house in England. I don't know, but if they have an office in England, I'm sure they'll hang out together.
So you think the Apple stores will start to take on a women's touch, if you will?
I'm not exactly sure what that means.
Softer colors, not quite so steel and glass.
Oh no, I don't know. I have a feeling that
more earthy tones, perhaps.
Well, no, I actually don't. And this is the
come on.
I don't think so, and this is the reason why. Number one, Johnny Ives is the design guru. He's the guy who makes those kind of decisions on a lot of that, you know, and it's a lot of the style of the Apple store was designed to reflect the tastes of Steve Jobs and Johnny Ives. And now that Johnny Ives is the one with all the taste left, I'm sure he'll get to continue his movement. But the big things that they've saying about Angela Adirance is that what she's great at is bringing people up who have good ideas, taking their ideas and making sure that those ideas get out there. And it's the dude that's taking over Burberry is basically we in the tech industry do not – we need more analogies is what we really need. But they describe him as the Johnny Ives of Burberry. he's the design guru who really came up with like the store layout and how they were going to do this and how they were going to do that. And what she was good at was saying yes and no to his ideas and crafting him into a future leader so that when she left, they'd be left with a strong leader and overseeing those ideas. So no, I think she's going to take more of a Steve Jobs-ish role where you'll see some of her, you know, personal preference and flavors shine through. But I think from what I've read, what she's great at is not being the creative genius, but managing the creative geniuses. And that's what, you know, I shouldn't say that she's not, from what I've read, she's got a lot of taste. She's got a lot of creativity. She's very good, but it's her real skill is leading them. So I would guess that you're not going to see real dramatic changes to the overall stylings of the Apple stores. They're going to stick with the glass and aluminum and wood, and you know the normal flares, at least for a while. I think chances are she'll have more of an effect on like customer relation stuff early on and kind of how you're treated as a customer and what you're brought into. And, you know, you might see promotional things change over time. It's cool. I think it was a good idea. The idea of finding a, you know, Tim Cook hired that one dude real fast, right after, and then fired him right away because he wasn't a good fit. And I think looking for somebody who knows and understands what it means to sell luxury items was a good idea, because that's what Apple does, and that's their bell horn. So, it's cool.
She's also pretty good at the social media side of selling too, or she's at least into it. So we might see Apple become a little more social, which could be interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're not at all.
Right. And they say that she is very tech savvy. That's like the one thing that everybody's like, yeah. It's not just that she knows how to sell luxury brands, it's that she's very involved in the technology sector. And they talked about the idea of like, you know, you get these new iBeacons, right, that everybody's talking about, and Apple hasn't incorporated them into their stores yet, which they were like, you know, they were the first ones to mount iPads on everything, and, you know, like, oh, that's super cool. That's what you can do with it. You know, they're usually the first ones to incorporate their new technologies in the store and use that as a, you know, the stores themselves act as demos for different technologies and how to use them. And it's like the Apple Store app where you can go in and buy products off the shelf without talking to anybody. I still think it's the weirdest thing in the world that they let me do that. And just walk out with, you know, hundreds of dollars worth of merchandise. I paid for, trust me, you can believe me, Apple. I think it'll be cool to see how they incorporate things like iBeacons into their store and what they do. And I think you'll see a lot of her personal flair and preference incorporated in that. I do think it's interesting that kind of in conjunction with this, RJ Pittman of Apple fame, you're like, who is this guy? He's the dude who's in charge of the AppleStore.com, which has been separate but tightly, connected for a long time. And it's I think what people are saying is basically eBay gave him a really good offer and he was getting a new boss and probably losing part of his fiefdom. And because the idea is that she's gonna get the reins of how Apple sells product, from the website to the store floors, and there's gonna be a real continuum between the two, and this dude was like, whatevskis, I can get a better job. I'm like, whatever, you can't get a better job. It's an Apple, but
Oh. Right. Yeah, well.
What do you think of her?
No, just looking at the reception of her is definitely a whole lot better. And, I think people are excited. She's got, she doesn't start for a while, so.
How long?
Got some time. She starts spring of next year.
Oh.
So. Oh. We've got a little ways to go, but it sounds like it'll be cool. And there is also, another big deal is she is the first, or she will be the only woman executive in Apple, and that's gonna change things.
Really? And,
yeah, I think so. Things change, honestly. I mean, there are differences in genders. That's just the way it is, and you look at the way that she dresses and even her previous job, you know, she, I don't want to say it, she is a lady and she acts like it. And I think, you know, I said it half jokingly, but I do think she will round out the guys a little bit. Hmm. And, you know, I mean, they're all professionals, don't get me wrong. I just, you know, they're guys. And they, guys see the world one way, girls see it another way. And
yeah, I don't know if you'll see that much of a smoothing of Johnny Ives. He seems to be a little bit opinionated and stuck in his ways. But I'll spit like the Bob Mansfields of the Apple universe could be softened a bit.
Yeah, I just, you'll see it in the way that they, I think, communicate things and some of the choices they make. Yep. Mm. No.
Interesting. Yeah. Cool. Interesting. We'll have to keep a watchful eye on this.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh man. So so.
Motorola. What are they up to?
Yeah. So this is a big week for the boys over in at the Googleplex. They broke $1,000 on their stock price, which for that's anybody who didn't buy their IPO stock at $87, y'all feel like idiots. Yeah. And so, they had some good news, a lot of good news coming out, this week about just making money hand over fist and all sorts of stuff. And so, I do think that they also had a little bit of bad news. But it wasn't enough to materially hurt their stock price at all, as it went up a lot. But they've got a couple of big things going down in the Android universe that I wanted to talk about. So one of the big
just for the record, I love how you're like, they had a bunch of really good stuff, and we're going to talk about the bad stuff.
Well, you know, we'll get around to it. So, we'll talk about the good things. We'll talk about basically they made a ton of money. That's like the extent of the good stuff. Like, their market share's up, and they made more money than anybody thought they were going to make. So, yay. Yeah. You know, which is cool. And for Google, when they make more money than anybody thinks they're going to make, their stock price goes up. For Apple, their stock price goes down, which is surprising. But like I've said a million times, the stock prices on these companies are hardly correlated to anything of real value, which drives me crazy. But
don't play. Just don't play, man.
I know.
It's the only way to win.
Exactly. So basically what's going on is one of the blights on the otherwise awesome Google company is Motorola. They are burning cash. Like, that is their singular goal and job in the world. Google hasn't been able to stymie the bleeding yet. They're spending a lot of money and they're not making a lot. And basically the long and short of it, Motorola lost $248 million last quarter, which is up from $49 million in losses when Google first took over the smartphone maker. So, yeah. Now, you know, the reality of it is, to be fair, although Motorola has lost $1 billion since Google acquired it for $12.5 billion, which brings the total that Motorola has cost Google up to $13.5 billion. The reality of it is that you got to spend money to make money, and they know that. There are marketing costs, development costs, hiring costs. There are a lot of costs that go into Motorola. At the time when they took them over, they were like, they're dead in the water. I mean, they weren't doing anything. So they, you know, they were just freaking out. So it's one of those things where it's not unreasonable. It's not like things have gotten dramatically worse for them. I think now that they have the support of Google, Google has given them the ability to spend a lot of money without making any money in order to lay the foundation for making more money in the long run. And so it's, you know, it's But at the same time, it looks really bad. Because it's a lot of money. So yeah, the idea right now is that they're instead of, you know, doing what BlackBerry's doing, which is trying to figure out every way to not spend money at no matter what it costs, you know, to their innovation and their ability to, you know, produce smartphones for the future. Motorola's trying to keep going. Somebody mentioned that it's like these losses remind us a little bit of Microsoft's online division, which just burns cash. So the question that everybody's asking,
you know, it's kind of funny. It totally reminds me of Millionaire Next Door style book, right? Where the premise of the book is they went and interviewed a bunch of deci millionaires, people who had at least $10 million. And, you know, they learned a lot about their lessons and stuff. And then one of their general takeaways is that they found that, like, our parents' generation, and maybe even a little before them, had to bootstrap their own way through stuff. You know, they had to get a job. They had to work hard. They had to earn their success. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was a lot of hard work and uncomfortable at times. But for the most part, they got it. You know, they got that success. They got the dream home, the vacations, the cars, the kids, whatever. And then what happened was a lot of them wanted their kids to be successful, but they didn't want them to go through the hardships that they did. And so they set them up and said, hey, look, we'll pay for your first house, or we'll pay for your car, or we'll fund your startup idea so that you can work on it. You know, you don't have to get a job, just work on your dream, you know, until it becomes a reality. And one of the ironic things that this book, you know, did an excellent job of, you know, talking about and, you know, proving out with statistics and all that fun stuff was it was the struggles and the hardship that gave them the fortitude and the strength to become successful.
Right.
And so they just countless story after story after story of situations where they had these kids who were, you know, 25 to 35, living at home, off of parents, pursuing the dream.
Yeah.
You know, and they were just like, are you kidding me? This is not, no. And even the parents had gone as far as like, oh yeah, little Johnny, he's down in the basement working on his gaming company thing. It's going to happen anytime now. You know, and they go down and they look and he's like playing video games. So yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, this component. And so I'm doing research right now, you know,
I mean, video games too.
Yeah. Well, and it's, and to go with this example, like Johnny genuinely feels like that's what he's doing. He doesn't feel like he's duping his parents.
Right.
He feels like he's doing research for his idea and his idea will take off and he will complete it. And the parents are like, he's doing research. But any third party observer, which these guys were, would be like, are you kidding me? You're just playing video games. This is not a recipe for success.
Right.
And so I wonder if you get a similar situation here where, you know, Google, granted, they didn't have a ton of hardships, but, you know, they had to earn their money. And there was a period in time where they're like, dude, we got to figure out how to make money or else we're going to shut down the search engine. And they figured it out and were massively successful beyond wildest dreams, right? You know, stock price of over $1,000. Congratulations, you guys are a success. So now it's like, they bring on this smaller sibling, this kid company, and they go, okay, look, we think you got potential. We think you're awesome because, you know, you're part of us now. But we don't want you to go through the hardship of trying to figure out how to make money. We don't want you to get a part-time job and, you know, just to make ends meet. We just want you to skip straight to the awesomeness. So we'll give you whatever you need to make that happen. Go do it. And you get that, like, Google genuinely believes it. Motorola genuinely believes it. Microsoft's online division genuinely believes it.
Right.
Any third-party observer goes, no, this is not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's funny. I mean, it's, you know, I'll use the SimCity example because it's fun. But it's, you know, I'm playing the current SimCity, and I, you know, when you build your first city, you start with small roads and you start with, you know, few services, and you build up and you scale your services and your roads with your how much money you're making, and you sort of keep it in parity, and you always have your costs be a little bit less than your income so that you make money and grow over time. You can buy cool things. The problem that you run into is that you've got your like old town where all your roads and everything is designed for a much smaller city, and then you know you've got your new town where your real profit centers are, but you don't have enough space because you give so much of your time and money trying to build up the initial city, and it's frustrating. So the second city that you start in that region, you're like, okay, we're going to do it right this time. We're going to build, you know, I'm going to start out only building the best roads. I'm going to start out so that everything is going to be set. You know, I'm going to space everything out so that it's all designed so that when I finally get around to building this city up more, you know, and as it grows up, so I'm going to design it with the end game in mind.
Yep.
And so you give yourself a nice little gift. Your other city is doing well. You got a lot of money. So you give yourself a million, simoleons, no,
which is a ton. Yeah,
simoleon. Yeah, $1 million. Yeah, which is a ton of money. And you go in and you build everything up, and you build fire departments and police and everything all over the place, and you build the right education system, and everything is ready for your city to start thriving, and you are burning through $30,000 a month in cash on top of the million that you already gave you. And so your only solution is to go and gift yourself another $1 million as you go back to the old city. And, you know, at least within that game, it's like the end game, you know, there's no real cost to it, right? It's a video game. And if you just stick with it long enough, eventually you will turn it around and you will build up this cool city that's got this strength and,
well, and let's not forget about the analogy is you're doing it.
Right.
You know, an even better analogy would be you built this city and you're making millions of dollars, whatever. I come along, total noob, and say, oh, I want to play. And you go, okay, James, you can play, but I don't want you to have to struggle to try to figure out how to make ends meet.
Right.
Here's $1 million. Go build your city. I'm like, oh, sweet. Right. Cool. And you know, you at least are playing with the experience of here as I know what works.
Right. You know? And when I realize what I've done to myself and I'm like, oh, I can't afford any of this. I can go back and I don't feel so bad about giving myself another $1 million. You know, and yeah. It's exactly that thing. And you can see that logic in it. Exactly. You can see the logic of we'll make sure that they do it right. We won't close down factories that aren't in use. We won't fire people that, you know, we're over. We've got too many employees. We will open new factories in America because it looks cool. We will do this. We won't do this. We will do – and all on the premise of Motorola is going to become a major manufacturer of handsets again, and we're going to lay the foundations for a future where that's what Motorola is. And yep. You're like, cool, guys, now all you have to do is sell an unbelievable number of phones.
Yep.
So how are you going to do that? And they were like, well, we're going to come up with this cool idea where instead of cases, you can just pre-order your phone to have different colors. Oh,
nice.
Awesome. And the worst part about it is Google accidentally confirmed the Nexus 5, which this week, and accidentally we should use finger quotes because everybody's like, sure, they accidentally did it. But it's like, this is once again, you know, everybody's looking at this thing and the specs that are going to be coming with it with a great camera and good battery life and the best of this and the best of that. And the price is unbelievable. And you sit there and you go, And that is what when I buy, if I'm going to buy a Google phone, if I want to buy something that's done by Google for Google with Google's thing, I'm going to go and get a Nexus 5. I'm going to get a Nexus because that's where the real nerds are pouring in their blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah. You got Motorola. It's like, what is Motorola selling? What are, seriously, you guys are selling different plastic cases, different color cases. And, you know, like, it's not just plastic cases. We have a wood case that you can buy. Okay. My bad. Sorry. You just sit there and you go, oh, seriously, Google, what are you spending your money on here? What is going on? And it's setting up, I think, something of a dangerous situation. And I've been feeling this way for a while, and more people are starting to feel this way and starting to talk about it this way. But the idea that there might be solutions to this problem. People want Android phones. They're selling tons of them all over the world. And what they may need to do is to give Motorola a competitive advantage over their... yeah, you're shaking your head. But it's like basically what they have to do, what Google has to do, is they have to go toe-to-toe with Samsung. They have to take on Samsung. They have to start advertising campaigns where they're not just talking about how cool the new Motorola phone is, but they have to start making fun of Samsung. The same way, you know...
You can't do that.
I know.
That, no, that's not an option. They can't do that.
They can't do that, but it's like, no. Is there another, like...
Let me give you an example of why you can't do that, okay? Do you want to know the... okay. It's generally thought that smoking is bad for you.
Yes.
And people would love, you know, there are certain groups that would love people to stop smoking.
Yes.
Do you want to know the number one thing that stopped or that decreased, how do I want to say this? The number one thing that stopped people from smoking, or, you know, there's different advertising campaigns and stuff but trying to get people to stop smoking. Do you want to know the thing that worked the absolute best, better than anything else?
What?
You're going to love this. The different cigarette companies started to do negative ads against the other cigarette companies. They were like, you know, Marlboro would be, you know, like, oh, don't use that one because their filters are horrible. You know, they don't actually filter. And then that's the only one I know. There's got to be another one out there. Lucky Strike was like, don't do Marlboro. Because their paper is recyclable.
That is a testament to Marlboro's marketing campaign, though. I can't think of another one, and I sat there and went, I don't think I can either. I got to Camel eventually.
Well, the only reason why I thought of them is because they own Kraft, and they make macaroni and cheese, and I love that. So, so anyways, but, I mean, like, you've seen those campaigns, right? Like, smoking's bad, and, you know, they're just general.
Don't smoke, okay?
Yeah, but the best ones were the ones where they were attacking each other. And eventually, they had to be like, okay, we got to stop, because this isn't working at all. Because they were just losing customers across the board. And,
that's funny.
Yeah, and, you know, and so yeah. I think that's the huge, huge risk that Google would be taking, because they're fundamentally attacking Android, and I think they would see exactly – not to say that Android's like smoking. I'm not trying to say that. I'm not trying to say that.
Yeah. So who's the fanboy this week?
No. I think if HP or Dell did that with – okay, it still doesn't work. You know, whatever. Pick a market, fine. I think if HP – did that with printers against Canon or Xerox, you'd start to see people like, well, printers are bad for you. You know, no, I'm not going to do it.
Look how expensive those guys' ink are.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
And it's one of those where it's like, ah, geez, none of these are perfect or really good for you, are they? I guess I won't do any. And so I just feel like that's a huge risk that that they would be taking. And that's why you can't do it. Not to mention you tick off Samsung and they switch over to another operating system and boom.
That's my broader point here is that the reality of it is even if you stay away from the negative campaign, because I think that's a terrible idea.
Good.
At some point, my big argument here is that they don't have a lot of good options.
Other than you got to start making kick butt phones, you know. Google goes, Nexus is Motorola. Nexus.
But the thing is, and this is my concern, is that at some point they do go toe-to-toe with Samsung. They've got to sell phones to people who were going to buy Samsung phones instead of Motorola phones. I mean, maybe they think that they can eat Apple's lunch still and there's enough room for both of them. But I think they're wrong. I think that the reality of it is that anytime somebody decides to buy an Android phone instead of an iPhone, that, you know, Motorola and every Android system out there is going to be competing for that new, you know, that piece of the market.
You've already got the customer to go halfway. They've chosen your operating system. Now it's a question of hardware.
Right. And the thing
maybe
is that it's
features.
And you can both go into it as sitting there like, we're the best and only do positive campaign. I don't think Samsung's going to I don't think Samsung will abide that because they're pretty cutthroat. And it's one of those things where I Samsung got to where they are through a gigantic marketing campaigns where they, you know, amongst other things, attacked Apple quite, you know, gallantly and effectively, you know, and so they know what they're doing.
Do you think they would go after Motorola?
And they don't have to
They go after Motorola, I guess.
I would say they don't. Google. See, the thing is that they don't have to, and so they're so dominant that it's like, why would you remind people that company exists at this point?
Yeah.
But give it time.
You never do as the 800-pound gorilla. You never do.
Exactly. And I think but the idea of Motorola to really start taking off and people were really questioning, well, should I buy the Samsung Galaxy S5 or should I buy the Motorola Nexus 6, you know, or whatever. Like, if people were really making that decision and they were moving a lot of volume and it was cutting into Samsung's market share, yeah, Samsung would go crazy. And because that's how they roll. and it's – so you sit there and you go, like, in order to actually make Motorola profitable, you have to get a decent market share, which you have to get at the cost of Samsung from their perspective. And Samsung is not going to like that at all. And so it's like if you don't go into a huge marketing campaigns where, you know, even if you stay positive the whole time, you're still effectively trying to, you know, compare yourself. When you walk into the store, you're going to compare. And at some point, it's like Samsung is going to sit there and say, well, look at all these cool features that we have. Our phone can track your eyeballs. We'll pause video when you look away. Can your Motorola do that? And what's Android or what's Google going to do? Actually, ours can do theirs can do everything ours can and more. So you should buy ours. No, at some point you have to give people a compelling reason to get yours, which means features that other phones don't have, which is dangerous. You know, it's not at this point, it's not just a price issue. That this Samsung's winning for three reasons. They're winning because they cost less, they have more features, and they've got a better marketing campaign. You know, what as Motorola, you've got to be able to come at them on all those levels. Well, they got the price down. That's easy enough for Google to do. When you don't have to make any profit, you can charge whatever you want.
I mean, that's where they got to be careful, right? Because
right.
They can't charge whatever they want, because if they have predatory pricing, they can get into big time trouble.
Exactly. And so now we're starting to get into this talk about, like, we're coming into the Surface.
Which you never want to compete on price anyways, so.
Right. commoditization and whatnot. But it's you know, now we're looking at like this great analogy of Microsoft Surface and kind of what they're doing to their OEMs, where, you know, HP is finally like, you know, last week we were talking about, they finally come out and said, yeah, we're competing with Microsoft. Like, obviously, really? You thought you weren't? And, you know, it's like, like we said last week, the reality of it was that, no, we've known we were competing for, since the day they launched the tablet. We just didn't feel like we could say it at that point. Now we can finally say it, and we're going to actively compete against our biggest and most important partner. You know, and it's like Samsung and Google, you know, we've talked about the nature of their weirdness of their relationship and the fact that Samsung drives so much of the Android universe right now because they're, you know, they sell a mountain of phones compared to a bunch of anthills. And you sit there and you go, you know, it's not just that Google wants to sell hardware. It's, they want control of their ecosystem. They want control of their stuff. And it's funny. This is going to kind of rolls into the fact that, you know, a lot of studies or a big study was released this last week that's arguing that Android has really closed the monetization gap against iPhone for apps. Basically what they're saying is that developers can make money. And they're making like 99 cents for every dollar that Apple's making. A lot of that comes down to different fees and different, you know, worldwide markets and stuff. But they're basically saying, like, you build an app, you're not going to make as much money per phone, per app, but you're going to make enough where when you multiply it by the enormity of Google's ecosystem and the number of market share, you actually start to come out competitively. It makes sense. You make as much money on Android as you do on iOS. One of the big reasons that they said that Android, that Google has been able to do that, is because they're trying to get everybody to upgrade their phones through the Android Play Store. And by doing that, they're basically getting everybody up to speed, where Samsung wouldn't update the phones, and they were really driving a lot of the segregation within the ecosystem that was making it impossible to make any money off of it. You know, they've been really, really, really working hard to bring that all back together, to stop the fractures within their ecosystem, to get everybody up to date. And they've been very effective about that, but it's been not at Samsung's behest. Samsung's not a big fan of that movement. They're not trying to help. It's Google doing it on its own. And you sit there and you go, like, at what point does when you're looking at this, do you sit there and go, Apple, or geez, you know, Google is, you know, with Motorola, like, what do you do? What do you do to start selling the phones in a way that's not a direct competitor, that you're not either charging yourself less for, which how can you do that? You know, how can you charge yourself less? It's free. theoretically, they're the only ones paying for it. and you sit there and go, the only real option is you got to build a better phone. You got to outbuild them, and you can't just build it faster with a bigger screen. I think you got to add features that nobody else has, which all of a sudden you're giving yourself builds of Android, or effectively a build of Android that nobody else can get a hold of, which Samsung then loses. Samsung, the reason why they're sticking with Android right now is because they effectively have control of the ecosystem. You know, they're a bigger driver of what happens than Google at this point. And would they want to give up that control at this point? I don't think so. I don't think they would. So it's like, what do you do? What do you do as Google right now? Like, I don't even know. There's no, unless they want to become Samsung, unless they decide that the only real option here is to become the guy that's selling, you know, 100 million phones a year, and just let Samsung do its own thing and sit there and go, you know, better that and have control of the ecosystem. You know, we won't sell as many phones because we'll be competing with Samsung's in their operating system, whatever they end up with. But it's better that than not having any control over it, because then we can't make any money off of it.
Let's see. If I were Google / Motorola, what would I do?
First, I'd buy an island.
I would probably... I would probably try to instill a lot more entrepreneur-style stuff with them. You know, okay, fine. You built this huge manufacturing plant that allows you to do, you know, quick turn stuff. I might sit there and say, okay, we're now going to have an internal competition, right? We're going to come out with 10 phones next year. We're going to see who can sell the most of them. Yeah. Come up with whatever features you want, you know, or better yet, you're like, okay, we've got these 10 concept ideas. Break your teams into what you think will be awesome, you know, or something like that. Where, and you know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but the idea would be, yeah, we're going to launch a ridiculous number of phones, and we're going to use it really as an incubator, as an experiment type place, and we're going to get back to the quick turn. Let's really try doing a lot of iterations really fast. And I get it, you know, it's hardware. It's harder to do that with hardware than it is with software, but, you know, whatever. It still might cost them a ton of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you tie people's bonuses and stuff to how it performs, and you ride them, and you push them harder than they've ever been pushed before. And eventually, like Samsung, you do find ones that fit and have a market and that work, and you kind of go that route. And then I think eventually you do end up, I think they also take over the Nexus line. There's no question in my mind about that. That would be like day one.
Yeah.
You know, you just go, you guys are our, you're now making our flagship phones. Done. And so you've got that, but then you also have those smaller, more experimental, or maybe not necessarily experimental, but like they're specialized types of devices that, you know, are also experiments and eventually make them into their bigger line. And maybe the Nexus line expands or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's tough. It's hard not knowing what their internal skills are as well. You know, they might have bought them and they're just like, man, you know, these people are not teachable. They don't think the way we do. And you know, you cannot just fire everybody.
Yeah.
But you know, you're just kinda like, it's tough. So
yeah. It's a weird place that they're in. It's definitely I don't know what Google thought they were doing. Well, actually, I do think we know. We talked about it a month or so ago. I think it was, what's his name? CEO took over from Schmidt, and it was this big thing. It was him stretching his wings and, you know, being the big man. Yeah, I can do this. I can totally do this. I can buy a phone company. And they bought it, and it was like, you know, it's been like a year, and everyone's like, so, what was your plan again? And there wasn't, it's just as, you know, I don't know. I think this was an idea that sounded really good, and they're, you know, it's Larry Page, right? He's the CEO right now. I think Page got a little ahead of himself and didn't really have a plan for it. Not necessarily outside of a look at all the things that this will allow us to do. Never mind the fact that it's a legitimate company that you have to turn a profit with. You can't just waste money on it. You know?
Yeah. Well, I think at the time, you know, they were having patent problems and they went, well, for $12.50, we can solve that. And then let's see if we can make something of it. And now we're in the, let's see if we can make something of it stage. But.
Right. So, oh, interesting. Very interesting. It'll be fun to watch.
Yeah. So I forgot to highlight this one, but I'm going to bring it up anyways because it's super fast. Remember last week how I was talking about, you know, I was talking about the watering a garden thing and using, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago,
the Arduino
with a sensor and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I read this article, of course. There's a startup called Greenbox.
Yeah.
That they liken them to Nest, where, let's see here. It's a cloud-connected smart irrigation system.
Nice.
So, yeah, essentially what it does is you can control your irrigation system from your phone, which is cool, but it also taps into the weather service, and so it knows that if it's scheduled or forecasted to rain, it won't water. Or if it did recently, it won't water. So the one thing it doesn't have, which I'm not a super fan of, is it doesn't have that sensor, you know, to try to figure out what the actual ground moisture is.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's close, and it's got a cool iPhone and iPad app, which I'm kind of like, I guess that's cool, I suppose. But anyways, I saw that and was like, oh, man, that's kind of my idea. It's not cheap either, though. That was my other, which they never are. $219.
I don't know.
But apparently there's also CyberRain, Rain Machine, and Weathermatic. So lots of choices, apparently.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. I still think there'd be joy in programming my own thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems like that would be easy enough to do. But I like the idea of connected to the cloud and get the weather service, too.
That is kind of cool. That is a cool cool feature.
Yeah. Anyways, I saw that, so I am brilliant. Just thought you should know.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So, I can't remember. I feel like we talked about this like years and years ago. But do you remember coming up with this like saying that you wanted to build like robots that would like clean windows and stuff?
Oh my gosh, we were in Seattle.
Yeah.
You were doing your co-op up there. Was it Mr. Nelson?
Yeah.
Who was with us? Was he with us,
or were you
just relaying a message?
I think that was the time he was with us.
Okay. All right. We were sitting in a place eating food, because that's what you do, and there was a ton of windows on this building, and I can't remember if it was, I think it was me who initiated it, who said something like, how would you clean these windows robotically, or something like that, you know, automatically, because there were a ton of windows.
Yeah.
And it seemed horrible, and there might have been someone washing the windows, which is why we thought of that. And he had a crazy idea. I think mine was pretty straightforward, and then his was pretty crazy, I think. I don't remember what your idea was, but his essentially, if I remember correctly, was like, oh, I'd invent robots that crawl up and down the windows or something, or maybe yours was that. And he's like, and the robots would clean the windows. And I think I was like, that's so dumb. Or overkill, perhaps, is my reaction.
Yeah.
So why do you bring that up?
I bring that up because one of the biggest struggles with building solar panel arrays is cleaning them and building them. And actually just kind of the whole thing, that putting them in place and then, you know, building and operating solar panels is what makes them expensive, turns out. There's actually, it's kind of cool. I read a couple articles this week about solar technology, and one of the trends that people have noticed is that there's never any like breaking ground ceremonies anymore, because for like big solar farms, because it's just so normal nowadays. It's just like, oh, it's another solar farm. So it's becoming more and more common. A lot more power is being generated through solar, but this company from Cali, came up with this idea. They said, I think if we can get the human factor out of it, what's cheaper than slave labor? Free labor.
Yeah.
Robots effectively. And so basically what they did was they came up with these really simple mechanical solutions for being able to build and clean solar farms like for crazy cheap. And, you know, this is kind of cool, because it's one of those like, you know, automation of the future and like, you know, robots doing stuff. And this is the kind of stuff that I've always wanted to get involved in, because you take a process that's relatively simple and repeatable, but that needs to be done a lot. You figure out how to do it in an automated form, and then you take it out in the field and you have the robots do it for you. And then instead of having an army of people who do the work, you've got a small group of operators who make sure, who maintain the robots that do most of the maintenance on the entire field. Eventually we'll have robots maintaining the robots, and then they'll take over and kill everybody. It's going to be a fun ride while we go down. What's really cool about this technology, they're like super secretive, because from what I'm gathering, is they're basically like, we're not doing anything like super creative. We're just doing it cheaply, so we don't want anybody to do it faster than us. It's not high tech, really. It's just kind of run in the middle robots that clean windows. so they're very secretive about it, because it just, you know, that's their competitive advantage at this point.
That's fair.
So they don't really get into how they do it. They just say, yeah, it's simple and this is what we're doing. But the big deal is that they're basically saying that this brings, when you get rid of the labor that's involved in maintaining the solar farm, which is, you know, once the capital expenses, so the capital expense is crazy expensive, right? And then the operating expense is still very high, because you got an army of people out there cleaning them, making sure their efficiencies are still high. If you can dramatically drop the operating expense, all of a sudden you can bring the overall expense of operating a solar farm in line with natural gas. Cool. Which is pretty cool. Natural gas has advantages, and the simple truth is that your non-green sources that aren't passively collecting are way more reliable, right? Because they do things like work at night. So you're never going to get rid of natural gas completely, or coal or oil or whatever, until you can generate power from starlight, or have some sort of a storage system. But they're getting better at it. It's like there was another article I read about some solar farm in I think it's Arizona that can collect power for 6 hours after the sun sets, because they've gotten some. I know it's crazy. I don't get it, but it sounds cool. But they're talking about. But you sit there and you go, when you can bring them in line cost wise, you're really starting to talk about the fact that, like, you know, there are compelling reasons to do this, and there's a lot of companies that are willing to make these giant investments in these sorts of companies, it's like Apple's, they're big old what's it called? Not solar farm, but their server farm is all run off of quote unquote, green energy, which effectively is they pay for an equivalent amount of wattage in green energy to be dumped into the field, because servers need ridiculously reliable energy sources. And so almost every electron that drives their server comes from burning dinosaur bones, they've offset that carbon to some degree. Google too, though. And so it's cool when you see this kind of stuff. It actually will continue to drive it in that direction, and then all of a sudden, when you get those nominal increases in performance from solar manufacturing, on top of the big increases that, you keep having these breakthroughs on, you might actually start to see more and more acceleration towards, really, really big, efficient, affordable solar farms that are helping save the world.
Cool.
Yeah.
Man, I would love to have some solar panels.
I know. I want robots, so if that requires me to get solar panels first, then okay. Deal. You sold me. But Cool, cool, cool.
So, did our parents download Windows 8.1 yet? Do you know?
I don't know.
You don't live at home anymore, so.
I don't. I tried to download Windows 8.1, but I couldn't.
Why not?
I don't know.
Like, the server wouldn't let you, or you're just like, I can't do it?
I, like, literally couldn't figure out how to, where it was. What? One of the weird things is it's not through a system update. You have to go into the Microsoft Store, which everyone was like, why would you hide it in the Microsoft Store? But I knew that, so I went directly to the Microsoft Store, and it wasn't there. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong. So I gotta figure it out. But everybody who's I've read who's used it says it's cool. It's better. All right, awesome, nice job, Microsoft. Not totally messing up everything.
So the rumor mill is that Microsoft is working on the next thing. And their idea is to make retweet, or RT, more like Windows Phone. Because they were saying they want to start merging those, and they were saying that it's easier to add features to a smaller operating system than it is to subtract features from a larger operating system.
Yes.
And so they actually believe that the Windows Phone OS will replace Windows RT OS.
So basically what they're going to do is copy Apple completely.
Yeah.
All right, that's awesome.
But they're thinking that it won't happen until like 2015, I think, is when they're – well, because they just did this update. They might do another small update next year-ish, but the big one is 2015. And then who knows what they'll do for regular for
whatever.
Windows 9.
They'll have a completely new CEO in a year. And
that's true.
And hopefully he's got better ideas than – because it's at this point it's so incredibly obvious that that's what you have to do, that you have to blur the line, really, really, really have a consistent scale between Windows Phone all the way up to Windows 8 and, you know, similar – not necessarily the way that Apple does it where, you know, you've got iOS – a consistent iOS for your tablets and everything. But I mean, it's not a bad strategy to have Pro, and you know, it's not a bad strategy. And it's actually one that, you know, like, people are arguing that Apple's going to come out with a 13-inch iPad, which will run a full-blown version of OS X, and it'll have a 64-bit chip in there, and that's why it was such a big deal, that it was desktop class for performance, blah, 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 blah. You know, and so, you know, reasonably, it's one of those, you sit there and you go, you know, it's a strategy people have been talking about forever, having two operating systems that are closely related, one for consumption, one for, production, and then a fleet of tablets that kind of blur the lines between the two. It's a good strategy. It might work for Microsoft. So why are they going to wait until it doesn't matter anymore to do it? Oh, my gosh. That just drives me nuts. Because it can't be that hard. I mean, they're already building phablet-sized smartphones, and, you know, why would that take more than a year? Why in the world would that
why it's taking more than a year is because of organizational problems, not because of technological problems.
Exactly. And because my question was going to be, you know, furthermore, you know, okay, you know what? Why would it take more than a year? And why didn't they start a year ago? Like, what the heck is that company doing? It just is, and like you said, it's organizational. It's the people who are making the decision on where they have to spend their time and resources are just whatever. They you know.
This could be the same type of issue that Google's facing with Motorola. Where honestly, I would not be surprised if Google's execs are like, why is this taking so long? This should have been done by now. You know, and so you see stuff like that. I mean, where it's just, you know, part of it is they're a large organization. They're going through a leadership change. They just did a restructuring, and anytime you go through that, there is a slowdown.
Yeah.
You know, when Dell was announcing that they were going through all of their stuff, HP was like, "Sweet, yes, we've got like a year to 2 years to do what we're going to do without them getting in our way."
Right. Well, and I mean,
and that's just true. That's the way it works.
I think that is true. And
good, because it is.
But I think with Microsoft, there's a How long did it take them to come up with a tablet response?
Look, they're not a company that is, you know, super, super creative. That's not part of their DNA, not part of their, you know, their culture. And, you know, so that's just...
I still stand that they've got great engineers, they've got great computer scientists
that work there.
But they've got a corporate culture that the guys that make these decisions are bad at making these types of decisions. And they have really, really, you know, you just sit there and you go, the Windows 8 strategy is not working. What are you, you know, the RT strategy has failed spectacularly. And if they think internally, if they have tried to find a silver lining in an RT, they're nuts. They're absolutely nuts. It's like, yeah, there are silver linings there, but they're not worth anything. You really need to fix it. And the simple solution here, it's tried and true. I mean, everybody else is doing this. Android is doing this. Apple is doing this. You know, those are really the only two players. I was about to say BlackBerry, but let's be real. But you sit there and go, like, you've got the platform, and people like the Windows Phone, and it's one of those things where you're not selling as many for a number of reasons, but it's not because of poor reviews of the operating system. Everybody who uses the operating system says, yeah, it's pretty cool. And, you know, the thing here and the thing that drives me nuts is that, you know, Microsoft's looking for something to turn it around, something to sell phones, something to sell desktops. And if you could, you know, and Android is having a hard time selling tablets right now. If you could build a good tablet, and who knows if they could. I mean, who knows if an RT level of hardware running a Windows Phone 8 soft, you know, operating system would actually be a compelling piece of hardware. I don't know. But if you could, and you could actually get people to say, wow, this is a good one, and it works with everything else at Windows, it's got Windows this, it's got Windows that, it fits the ecosystem, it's comfortable, I get it. And then look, hey, there's phones out there, you know, that have the same operating system that run the same apps. And you sit there and you go, there's something there, you know, there might be. There's definitely more potential than what you got going on with RT right now. So do something. Like, stop whatever you're doing and try something better. It drives me nuts because it's like it just doesn't need to be the way it is. They got so much more potential. I want so desperately for Microsoft to do well. I don't even know why. But it's like, he just, you know what it is? I think part of it is that when I lived in Washington, I actually became friends with a lot of Microsoft employees, and talking with them and humanizing, you know, giving Microsoft a face. It's easy when you live in the Silicon Valley to forget that like, they're really smart engineers that have really cool ideas and are really fun people that work for that company, because they get demonized so often here. And you know, where it's hard to, you know, you meet Apple employees and you're like, no, Apple employees are great. Google employees are great, because you meet them and you know them. And I think when I went to Microsoft, it's like, you know, or when I lived near Microsoft and I met the employees, I got that experience and was like, no, this is a good company. There are good people there. They're smart and they know what they're doing. Why is it that they keep producing what they're producing? And this, you know, this I think comes back to Bill Gates was the parent who made a lot of money, and Steve Ballmer is his kid who, you know, who got to take over a technology company and has a lot of money, and he makes a lot of decisions that aren't the decisions of somebody that's struggling to survive.
Fair enough, yeah.
And I think that the consequence of that has been a very lackluster response and that sort of thing. Because if Microsoft were really fighting for their life right now, you'd have an operating system in a year. You'd figure out how to do it. You would. It's not working. The solution, the strategy didn't work. you know, cut it off and move on. But no, they want to stick with the strategy. Work the strategy, just work the strategy. And like, it. That's so weird.
All right. Moving
Thank
on.
You.
Moving on. To Hulu, who has officially announced their new CEO, former Fox executive Mike Hopkins.
Oh, man.
Which is really only notable because for a really long time, you know, Hulu is trying to decide what kind of service it is.
Yeah.
Is it an ad-supported TV thing? Is it a subscription service? Is it a competitor to the cable companies? Is it a companion to the cable companies? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's it's hard to decide what kind of service it is. And so, you know, the new CEO that they bring in speaks a lot to it. You know, for a while there, they were trying to decide if they should sell it or whatever, and they decided that they're going to keep on to it. Or, you know, the current part owners like Disney and News Corp are going to, you know, keep it around. But they brought on this dude from Fox, which I think should be interesting because he was a big push and helped to make the Fox Now app for Fox. And so what they think is going to happen is they think that it might go the same way as the BTN to go or I think of like the ESPN apps, where in order to get access to it, you have to be a subscriber.
Mm.
You've seen those, right?
Yeah.
And so Hulu is officially pitching itself as a companion to the cable companies, not a competitor. And so they think that one of the tracks, you know, obviously they haven't said this yet, but given their CEO choice, they're like, Hulu might start heading down the track of you got to have a subscription in order to see these particular shows. If you're not subscribed, you know, if they're not a part of your cable package, sorry.
You know, there's probably,
I really hope that's wrong.
There is probably money. There's probably a good amount of money for the next decade to do that. Squeeze every dime you can. Try to prevent it. Because what it becomes is they basically bought a service that would go, if you're already a cable subscriber. I think there's a part of me that's trying to change my mindset on this sort of thing, because it's like, you know, clearly we want cables going away. It's just like anybody who can look 10 years in the future.
Or not necessarily you don't want it to go away. You want it to become a la carte.
Right. And you just sit there and go, like, it's going to completely become – it's going to be a completely different service. It's going to look completely different. Chances are it'll look a lot more like, you know, Netflix than anything. But the thing is you can look 10 years in the future and say, yeah, it'll be like that probably in 10 years when, you know, everything's, you know, 100 times better technology than it is today. But the reality of it is, I think that that there are people within the industry that said, yeah, in 10 years it's going to be like that, but it's not like that today. So let's try to make as much money off of what it is instead of, you know, let's squeeze out every cent out of this model that we can, and then, you know, give up ground, you know, painstakingly over time, continue to squeeze as much money as we can out of this until it's done. And I think what you're seeing is you're sitting there going, the cable companies are going, people are leaving because they're paying money for Hulu, they're paying money for Netflix. And if we make Hulu free with a cable subscription, and you already have a cable subscription, it's not going to bring anybody back to cable. All it's going to do is slow down the number of people the number of cord cutters, which
it'll slow it down because they'll go, oh cool, I've got a good option if I keep my cable subscription. It's just one less reason to drop your cable.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's not that it adds value, it takes away value from cutting.
Exactly. And which is annoying, But, you know, it's a strategy. You know, I'll give it to them. Somebody's going to make a lot of money on it.
And I'm kind of like, I get the subscription model. I get the advertising. I'm just like, do they just not make enough money off of it and the economics don't work? Do they really make that much money off of the cable subscriptions? And I guess the answer is yes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, HBO Go, their entire argument is that no, we will not, you know, we're not going to put this stuff on Netflix. We're not going to make it easy for you to buy the episodes until they come out on DVD, because HBO Go is a service that's it's literally designed to try to stop you from, you know, it's the exact same thing as like the Fox app and what we're talking about Hulu becoming, where it's just one less reason to cut. It's not one more reason to stay with us. It's just one less to not go away. And you sit there and you go, but they're like, but the reason why we don't release it is because it's worth so much money to have it be exclusive, to do it the way that we're doing it. And so we've got no reason to not to change at this point. And you sit there and go, well, fine, okay. I don't think you win in the long run. I think that, you know, you've only got another 10 years, but there are people sitting there going, I retire in 10 years. What do I care? I think that's the strategy on this one. It's like they know where it's going, and they sit there and they go, but, you know, we're just going to ride this one out until it's done. And
milk that cow.
Right. They don't see any reason to chase down the future, because they're making money now, and they'll just stick with it until they can't anymore. And which just bothers me so deeply. But I get it. And if I were working for them, would I quit if I were making a lot of money doing what they're doing? Probably not. it's a principled stand. It's easy for me to not like it the way that I am. But, you know, honestly, I'll be totally honest. I it's hard for me to read Hulu articles, because it's hard for me to care about Hulu. Because their commercials are so annoying. It just totally turned me off. And I just...
Wow.
Once Hulu Plus came out and they didn't get rid of commercials, I was like, I got nothing. I got... No, I don't care anymore. You guys deserve whatever happens to you. It's crazy. And everybody complains about the commercials on Hulu, and I'm like, whatever. I'd rather buy the show through iTunes. Actually, you want to know what? Seriously... makes me want to throw my computer out my window.
Yes.
Is the 30-second commercial when you buy stuff through iTunes, and they have like a little clip of like a commercial for their network where it's like, they're short, they're 30 seconds, or not even, they're probably only 15 seconds.
Really?
But it's just sort of like these are the shows on Fox when you download a Fox show. Yeah.
Huh.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. It's so infuriating. I paid $2 for this episode.
I was going to say.
I paid $2 for this because I hate commercials. Like, and that's the thing. I don't watch on TV because I hate commercials. I pay extra because I hate commercials. And y'all put a commercial in there. You know what that does to me? That tells me next time I'm not going to buy it. Okay, Fox, the next season – let me just be clear here. Fox – the next season of Archer, I am not going to buy because you put a 15-second commercial in there when I paid to not have any commercials. I'm going to pirate it. I am not going to pay for it because I hate you. I hate what you would do. I hate that you would do that.
I hate you.
You know, it's just – it's so – oh, my gosh.
Wow,
it's just
I can hear it in your voice. You are annoyed.
It's – oh, every time I watch an episode, I'm just like, this is so stupid.
Sorry, I should.
Just it is
clearly is they don't get why you're buying it.
Yep.
And yeah. You know, they're like, come on, it's just a small commercial. Don't worry about it.
Right, and it's you right. know, and it's
we're adding value. We're making you aware of other stuff, because clearly you like our stuff enough that you're willing to pay money for it. So we're going to tell you about other stuff that we know you'll be interested in.
There are ways.
You're welcome.
I'm going to say, and what's really annoying is there are ways to do it that wouldn't drive me as crazy. You can do like the, you know, the.
If they should at the very least just do it at the end. You know,
yeah.
What if you get to the end, credits are rolling, you know, you zoom them up or whatever, you know, whatever they do, and you just go, hey, incidentally, we've got other Hulu shows you might enjoy.
Right. Yeah. And but whatever, you know, it's one of those things where You know, it's funny. You know what wouldn't annoy me as much is that the TBS Very Funny. Have somebody say, like, you know, this is brought to you by TBS, and it's one of the actors from your TBS show. And, like, I don't know why that wouldn't annoy me quite as much. It probably would annoy me, but it's just so insulting. And the worst part is I feel like there's a good chance at some point it will become like movie sales back in the day with the previews that you can't fast forward through. Like I forget about those, man. I put old DVDs into my DVD player, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. Trailers, and I like trailers, and I hate them on the DVD. And it's just like, there was a big argument. I've seen a lot of people argue that the reason why they pirate isn't because they can't afford the movie; it's because they hate the trailers. Like, I just want to get to, especially
and the here they are trailers. Back in slow.
I know exactly, and it's just like somebody goes, "Well, it worked in the past." Yeah, it worked in the past, sort of, until we decided that we didn't have to put up with it, and then it didn't work. Like, don't you know? Oh, jeez. Okay. I got worked up here at the end.
That you did. And unfortunately, we don't have anything to calm you down, but that's all right.
Don't worry. Tuesday will calm me down.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be amped. Awesome. Well, on that note, I'm sorry that you have to watch commercials every once in a while.
Happy birthday, James.
Yeah. That's right. Thanks. Which I had a thought, you know, now that I've turned 30, I can't have a successful startup anymore. I'm done. I missed my window.
Bummer.
I know. Because you so got to be close. Up at 30. That's like the rule. So
close.
Didn't happen. Oh, well. We should just stop doing this, really.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm washed up. That's what it comes down to.
I need another partner.
I know, really. Preferably like a 12-year-old.
Yeah, seriously.
Apparently that's what you need.
Give ourselves a little bit more of a runway.
Yeah, seriously. Man, I saw this article where it was like, I forget what it was. It was 30 awesome apps that are made by people under 30. It's like, you
know, awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's, you know what? I don't know why that one doesn't bother me quite as much as the football players.
Oh, well, those,
they look so manly.
Yes.
And they're younger than me.
Yeah.
Oh, dang it. How do I look like a doughy child and they look like a... Oh, man.
Okay. At least you don't have to worry about head trauma later in life. So it's
awesome. That's true. I got that going for me.
Yeah, you got that. Anyways, just thought I'd put that out there. Everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my younger brother is Matthew Furlow. And so, oh wait, my gosh, I totally wasn't ready for this. And so we will talk next time. So I was listening to, or watching, I guess, How I Met Your Madre.
Yeah.
And one of the songs I heard in the background, believe it or not, apparently they use the same soundtrack where they get their music from the same place we do. Totally playing. Multiple episodes they use
awesome.
This song as their background. It's like, cool. I feel good about that.
So. That's good. That is always nice when you see that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, it is a good song, and they agree with me. This is a good song, just in general.